The Iron Girl by Ellen Hart. Chapter 1. Jane had just come through the front door when the phone rang. She dumped her luggage in the foyer and rushed to answer the cordless in the living room. "Hello," she said, sinking down on the couch, trying to catch her breath. The luggage had been heavy, and she'd carried it all in at once. "Janie, I've been calling you for hours." It was Cordelia, Jane's oldest friend. "The plane was late," said Jane, dropping her head back against the couch cushion. "We were supposed to land around 8:30, but didn't get in until closer to 10. "Why didn't you answer your cell phone?" Jane knew she was truly home when Cordelia's golden tones began ranting about one thing or another. The cell phone, for instance, was a running battle. Jane understood the value of cell phones, but rebelled at the idea of being at everyone's beck and call all hours of the day and night. The wee hours of the morning were when Cordelia was most prone to call. Cordelia Thorne was the artistic director of the Alan Grimby Repertory Theater in St. Paul, and a woman who loved the night. She felt that sunrise, in general, was highly overrated, and didn't understand why poets rhapsodized about morning dew and all that crap. "I turned my cell phone off," said Jane. "You drive me insane!" "Besides, you can't use a cell phone on a plane, Cordelia. It's against the law." "That's why the clever little people who make them provide you with an on button." "I forgot." "Right, like I believe that. It's your reclusive nature leaking out, Janie. You really should see someone about that, a therapist, an exorcist." "Don't I even merit a welcome home? I've been gone 10 days. On the other hand, she and Cordelia had hardly been out of touch. Cordelia had called daily for a romantic update. Jane had spent spring break with her new love, Kenzie Mulroy. Kenzie was a professor of cultural anthropology at Chadwick State College in Chadwick, Nebraska. They'd only been together a little over 4 months, but already Jane knew it was serious. She wasn't one to leap into bed with virtual strangers, partly because she'd been in a wonderful committed relationship for almost 10 years, until her partner's death. It was hard to measure a new relationship against that one, especially since it had attained the rosy patina of long ago, of remembrance and not everyday routine. Many of the rough edges had been worn down by time, although not all of them. But what stood out in Jane's memory was the intensity of the love she and Christine had felt for each other. Jane's brushes with romance over the years had mostly faltered. It hadn't been her choice, it was just the way it had worked out. Cordelia, who was serially monogamous, with oodles and oodles of cereals, most of them brimming with melodrama, didn't understand Jane's reticence about dating. Jane didn't like to talk about it. Maybe she felt guilty that she'd been able to go on living when Christine's life had ended so abruptly and at such a young age. Or maybe there were other, less obvious reasons, but none of them were anybody's business but her own. "Just sit tight," said Cordelia. "I'm bringing someone over." "I just walked in the door." "So? I'm exhausted, and I have to call Evelyn Bratrud and go pick up Mouse." Mouse was Jane's dog, a chocolate lab. He'd been staying with a neighbor while she'd been gone. "Evelyn goes to bed right after Law and Order. If you call her now, you'll wake her up. Go get him in the morning." She had a point. "But I'm filthy. What I need is a shower and a good night's sleep." "Okay, take a shower and a 5-minute power nap. It's still early, Janie. It's not even midnight." Jane groaned. "All right, I'll bite. Who do you want to bring over?"
"It's a surprise."
"I don't like surprises." "Bet you'll like this one. Like I always say, unexpected invitations are dancing lessons from God." "To what am I being invited?"
"Nothing less than your future, dear heart."
With that, Cordelia hung up. Cordelia lived in a downtown loft. Jane lived in a house in Linden Hills. Doing a mental calculation, Jane figured she had about 15 minutes to shower, wash, and dry her hair, dig up some clean clothes, and make herself presentable. But she wasn't in a mood to rush. Instead of heading up to the bathroom, she drifted down to the basement. After Christine's death, Jane had boxed up her belongings and stored them in a room next to the laundry. It had been too painful to sort through at the time. Over the years, she'd come down occasionally and opened a box or two, but she could never bring herself to make any final decisions about what to toss or what to save. Intellectually, she knew that Christine lived in her heart, not in her old shoes. It was just stuff, and stuff could be discarded. After returning from her visit with Kenzie, Jane felt that she not only needed to try, but to succeed this time at making peace with the past, saying goodbye to Christine in a way she'd never been able to before. Part of this new effort to move on was to deal with the detritus of her partner's life. Jane switched on a light and stood for a moment staring at the boxes. It didn't take but 5 seconds for the feelings to hit. It was like darts being tossed at her skin. All the chaos of emotions she kept locked behind that shelf in her brain came tumbling out. Closing her eyes, she thought of Kenzie, of what they were building together. Jane had lost her mother when she was 13. Loss seemed to be one of the few permanent elements in her life. But if loss had taught her anything, it should have taught her to let go, move on. What she held in her hand now was a tender, fragile, but growing new love. This was the second chance she'd been hoping for. It was unthinkable that she'd let a memory mess it up. When she opened her eyes, the world fell back into place. The boxes came back into focus. There were 26 in all, a person's life reduced to 26 boxes. Pathetic, except that hardly summed up Christine. Willing herself to move further into the room, Jane ran her hand along the dusty tops. She opened one, but the photograph of Christine that met her eyes caused her to close it back up. How long would it take for these ruins to grow mute? The next box contained Christine's drawings. She'd been a good artist, working both in watercolor and pastels. The top drawing was one she'd done of Jane a few weeks after they'd first met. The sight of it gave Jane's heart a hard twist, and she immediately looked away. "Damn it all," she whispered, slamming the top shut. She walked into the laundry room, checked the dryer, and found one lone sock. Working up her courage, she returned to the storage room. "Come on, Lawless, show some guts." Spying a box with the words "real estate" written across the front, she pulled it free and carried it over to a chair. She figured that Christine's job was the least likely area of her life to turn on the water faucet behind Jane's eyes. Removing the top, she found a bunch of file folders stuffed down next to Christine's soft-sided leather briefcase, the one she took with her to appointments. Jane moved the box to the floor so she could sit down on the chair. She lifted the briefcase out, then unclipped the leather strap and flipped the cover back. Inside, she found Christine's datebook. She paged through it, seeing personal notations along with notes about business appointments. In late August, the appointment stopped. Jane took a deep breath, holding it until the wave of sadness passed. Nothing in these boxes would be free of emotion. After a few seconds, she placed the datebook on the floor and rummaged around to see what else was inside. It was mainly junk. Pens, a package of chewy gum, a stick of lip gloss, a hairbrush, steno notebook, a packet of business cards, an unopened can of Dr. Pepper. At the bottom of the briefcase, she found a white paper sack. Her eyes opened wide with surprise when she saw what was inside. It was a gun. A small derringer with a carved ivory handle. Because it was so light, Jane wondered if it might be a toy. She examined it more closely. Not only was it real, but it was loaded. Christine hated guns. Finding one in her briefcase made no sense at all. "What on earth?" she whispered, her mind returning to the last few weeks of Christine's life. She'd been trying to get Bernadette Simoneau's house in shape so it could go on the market. The only reason Jane remembered the name of the woman Christine had been working with was because of what had happened to the Simoneau family shortly after Christine had been admitted to the hospital. The bloody horror of that night in late August was an eerie image virtually all Minnesotans carried around with them. It had been the single most infamous murder case in Minnesota history. Jane had always thought Christine knew nothing about the dark, twisted Simoneau family. And yet here she was carrying a gun when she visited the mansion. That told a far different story. Selling Bernadette's house had been the focus during the last few weeks before she died. Christine said it was the biggest potential business connection she'd ever made. But if she felt the need to carry a gun, it was not only possible but likely that she knew more about what was going on in the family than she'd ever let on. "More secrets," whispered Jane, feeling something clench in the center of her chest. Christine had been a master at keeping secrets. Beyond her own feelings, finding the gun raised other issues. What had Christine known about the Simoneaus? Could that knowledge have altered what happened at the trial? Maybe Jane would jump into conclusions, but something inside her, call it instinct or sixth sense, told her that the gun was a message, a tantalizing, frightening, yet irresistible tug to look more closely at the last days of Christine's life. What Jane had come home from Nebraska hoping to put behind her now flashed inside her mind like a neon sign. She knew in her gut that that was exactly the wrong direction to take, the wrong time to get sucked back into her dead partner's past. And yet she also knew that the gun represented a larger mystery she would feel compelled to unravel, wherever it might lead.